X3 Audio Diary.
I'm Charles Avery. This exhibition at X3 is the second part of my project called The Islanders. It's a touring exhibition that was originally in Paris at the FRAC and Le Plateau in Paris, and it then went to the Kunstverein in Hanover. And this is the third and final destination for the show. And the show is called Onomatopoeia, Part 1, which Onomatopoeia is the name of the town on my fictional island. And this exhibition concentrates on describing that town as the latest part of this project, which I've been working on for 5 years now, which is going to take me the rest of my life. I started the project because I was disorganized and I needed a place to put my ideas. It wasn't an all-encompassing project then, it was simply just a place. And then that place became the island, and it very rapidly became a pure system for the island to represent the world of all concepts and the world of all ideas. It's still not that organized. I'm still struggling with the organization. The project is a work in progress, and I'm working out how to do it is as much work as the actual drawing or the making of it, and it's something I'm still struggling with. I think I very much wanted to retake the territory of art making as a way of thinking. And when we think, we don't think perfectly, we think in a very random and kind of directionless way sometimes. And so that, I think that's my greatest challenge at the moment, is how to do it. There is a way into it, which is through the voice of the hunter, who is the arch agent, the person who, the voice who perceives it and narrates it to us. But beyond this character introducing us to the island, there's no prescribed way of reading it. So it is a space, it's very much a space as opposed to a narrative. There's no history on the island, there's no chronology, so there are events which are remote in time, which are kind of like myths, but they're not in a chronological order, they're just remote in time, as in space. There's remoteness, but there's not time like that. Yeah, well no, my island is not isolated. I mean, there's a huge amount of trade that happens between the fiction of the island and the real world, that which exists outside of the fiction. So there are huge pleasure cruisers that come into the port at Onomatopoeia, and there are thousands of tourists who come streaming off the boats, and the tourists take things away from the island. So it's devolved, but it's not an autonomy in any way. I think it would be naive to try and achieve an autonomy. It's very indistinct, the border. Actually, the two countries, the idea of reality is represented by this country called Triangle Land, where we all come from, and then the island represents its opposite and reality. But in this system, reality does not have priority over unreality. They're simply two symbiotic states. The Triangle Landers, the reals, they perceive themselves to have, through some kind of colonial arrogance, they perceive themselves to be more important, and they see the island as being their colony. Whereas the islanders, a Creole race that has grown up on the island, have the opposite opinion. The islanders are triangle landers, they're colonists, they're all, so culturally they're very linked. But I think the characterising quality of the triangle lander is their desire to categorise and to number things, and their complacency and their ability to do so. Whereas the islanders kind of abhor this mentality of knowledge and of possession and of facts and of knowing the answer to things and feeling like you know something because you know his name. They understand the distinction to know some things, not just simply to know his name. So their two characters are very different than that, but they come from the same root. And geographically, they're not completely disconnected, the two countries. You arrive at the island by sea, but actually it is connected to Triangle Land by land, or something that's kind of almost land. It's a kind of marshy wetland, which is kind of a bit land and a bit water, and is very still and very misty. So you could actually walk there it would be very dangerous. I mean, these two countries represent many dualities. I mean, you can read them as representing many dualities. You could say it was the difference between the conscious and the subconscious. So you can say inside and outside, or right and wrong. I mean, you know, it's endless. It doesn't specifically mean any of those. It's just a critique of the idea of duality, full stop.
Ricapitoliamo. Charles Avery è un artista scozzese. Dal 2004 si dedica a un unico progetto, The Islanders, un'impresa gigantesca, demiurgica, che tenta di formalizzare l'infinita immaginazione di Avery e la labirintica natura del pensiero umano. L'isola immaginaria che l'artista ci descrive ha una sua topografia, una sua flora, ha delle leggi specifiche, i suoi credi. È una palestra per le idee dove ogni oggetto o soggetto ha una sua ragione filosofica. Tra l'isola e realtà non c'è gerarchia di importanza. Gli abitanti dell'una e dell'altro mondo sono legati a una medesima radice, anche se gli uomini reali visitano l'isola con un piglio quasi da colonizzatori. The Hunter, il cacciatore, è l'unico che può guidarci alla sua scoperta. Ad Onomatopeia, la capitale, non si può che rimanere colpiti e sorpresi dalla presenza di strani soggetti con in testa dei cappelli bizzarri, da alcuni animali che non intendono essere bizzarri, ma che sono sicuramente diversi, serpenti con un braccio solo e lepri inafferrabili.
One of the principal tourist attractions on the island is the eternal dialectic, which is this endless philosophical argument which happens in all the bars and hostelries. And the tourists like to come and visit it, and they like to go into a bar where such and such, because each creed is identified with a bar where they have their regular meetings. There are the major groups like the empiricists and the rationalists, and then you have smaller subgroups of these, and you have other groups like the solipsists, and then they break right down to these tiny little factions like fasci. And some are very grand. The most important groups, like the mainstream empiricists, have their own buildings and very grand, and the most esoteric ones, the avant-garde ones, they always change their location because they don't want the tourists to know where they are, because they want to stay, you know, they want to stay cool. Anyway, the tourists are very keen to get involved, and the tourists come along and they will go and try and get involved. You know, like, I don't know if you've ever been to see stand-up comedy, and when a performer stands up on a stage and tells jokes, you know, really, well, does a routine. And there's always someone in the audience, like, heckling them or trying to be funnier than the comedian. So you get these tourists who come and they try and involve themselves in the dialectic. But each group has a hat which represents their particular belief. But the real kind of philosophers, they never wear them. It's simply the tourists who buy the hats, because they're very keen to identify themselves with a particular belief immediately. And so they wear them. In the terms of the exhibition, they have a very formal purpose in the exhibition as well, which is to be utterly objective and to be there in the room and to take the drawings off the room. But they're very still. All the objects I make are very extended existence beyond the four walls of the drawing. They're kind of photographic, the drawings, in a way. Not photoreal, but photographic in the sense that they're of there's a sense of movement and a sense of something, like I say, happening beyond the frame of the drawing, and a sense of continuation and a sense of you'll see people in the drawing picking their nose or something, but there's not, and that is not directly meaningful to the project. It's kind of texture, as background texture. You take a photograph, and I can't take a camera to the island, obviously, so I draw it, but I try and do it in that way that it feels like kind of reportage. But the snake is very meaningful, a one-armed snake. Yeah, I mean, it has one arm, that's what's meaningful about it. For me, it's not, I have no priority over saying what these things mean, I don't know. What I'm doing is creating a sort of gymnasium for ideas, but for me, the snake is to do with positive and negative numbers. I think when you say one-armed, you expect it to be lacking arms, you expect it to be a deficiency. But when the punchline is snake, it's actually a surplus of arms. So that's the joke with the one-armed snake to me, is that what should actually be a deficiency is a surplus. So it's kind of, for me, it represents a mathematical idea between plus one and minus one, but it's kind of disguised as a very sort of mystical. But the legend of the one-armed snake is very embedded in the islanders as well. It's a kind of symbol of fortune, of the idea of fortune. That's how the islanders have adopted it. There's a bar on the Avenue of the Gods called the One-Armed Snake, which is a very sort of seedy gambling emporium, games of chance. And there are a big advert on the gable end of the Penrose Trading Company, which is in the drawing of the port, which advertises the one-armed snake, and it's it always says, you know, come and try your luck, and it says game, you know, games of chance. It kind of invades the concepts of skill and fortune at the same time, which are kind of exclusive concepts. You can't put them together. But the one-armed snake is always dead. When people take things away from the island, these objects in the gallery, they're things that have been removed from the island. And when they remove from that subjective realm, from that scheme, they lose their vitality. The hunters who come to the island, there is this career as a hunter you can make on the island. People come there and always have done in order to seek a beast called a noumenon. The noumenon is a term that Immanuel Kant coined in philosophy, which is a Greek word. It means the opposite of a phenomenon. So a phenomenon is something as it presents to the senses, whereas a noumenon is a thing of and unto itself, completely independent of subjective experience of it. So it's the objective object. And in this system, it represents the ultimate truth. Nobody's ever seen it. None of the hunters have ever seen it, or nobody's ever successfully. People claim to have seen it, but they've always been alone when they see it. So all the hunters come to the island, and they go to its remotest parts, and they try and capture the noumenon. And even though they're always unsuccessful, they always believe that they will do it, and they're like humanity, they're continually hopeful. And the remote parts of the island are covered in these huge meadows. They're these great plains, and they're covered in these flowers, these little white flowers. And they're very flat. I kind of like what I imagine the plains of Mongolia might look like. You know, quite disorientatingly flat and endless, and it's very, you know, unnavigable, very important, very hard to navigate. And the hunters are always getting lost and dying. And sometimes they see this hare, or sometimes the hunters talk of this creature who seems to be able to navigate the subjective areas very easily. But he never helps the hunters. He just passes by. Peel back the layers. If you investigate it, you will constantly be rewarded by further material that will feed you back into the system, and you'll understand that there is a structure at play there. It's not just a casual invention. There is a structure, and that structure is very important. But it's still very much a work in progress, and the project has not reached critical mass. I mean, it really needs the patience of the viewer and the trust of the viewer to believe that that structure is there, which it is, but to actually evince that is a lot more work, and I'm just at the beginning. But I mean, in a way, we have to have that trust, because there's no alternative, really. What people do or do not do of the work in terms of articulating that meaning is kind of their responsibility, not mine. It's just my responsibility to create the term. I did have, when I first started the island, I thought I was going to make a territory, and I did design the territory. And I thought that I would be filling in this territory, but I've kind of shied away from that now. I don't want it to be that rigid. It needs to have structure, but the structure needs to be able to move. But if it gets too structured, it gets too rigid, it will implode in on itself as well and just be one thing. You don't really want to understand things. And there's a funny thing with audiences. They come to see the show, and people either want to understand, and if they don't understand something, like 1 + 1 = 2, then they get frustrated because they think there's something that's being told. It's not being told, I'm not saying anything. And then the converse, the audiences can get frustrated because they're being told too much and they don't want to know everything. So it's a kind of very delicate. I think about this all the time. So I mean, I have a very intimate knowledge of this place. For instance, I'm designing the town at the moment, and every time I kind of add a building to the town, every time it becomes more kind of elaborate and there's more of it and it starts to fall into place. It seems to start taking on quite a form there. We have town planning, we have this area, you know, it's really sort of coming together, the town. Well, the less I feel that I'm actually in control of it, the more I feel like I'm just discovering the town and it's not my idea, but something that just exists, which is slowly becoming apparent to me. So the more I'm in control, the more I seem to have done, the less I feel like it belongs to me or it is my idea. And I think that's what it's like for the hunter who first comes to the island. It's very unclear about whether he's inventing the island or discovering it. That's happened, that thing. Those two things happen simultaneously. They're the same thing, because he makes it, he vitalizes it, he gives it this subjective perspective, which kind of makes it exist beyond just being a bunch of facts or a bunch of things, a bunch of terms. The prologue talks about the hunter first coming to the island, believing himself to be its discoverer, and then rapidly finding out that he's not its discoverer because he meets Miss Miss on the shore, and who's this girl who lives on the outskirts of a town, and that he's been preceded by many, many generations of other hunters, and then of pioneers, and of colonists, and of industrialists, etc., etc. And this territory of ideas, which he thought belonged to him, is actually extremely well charted. And it's like that when you're a young person, you know, you start thinking about things and you think you're the first person to thought of a lot of things. And then you say, oh, you know, you have an idea, and if you actually present those ideas in the form of an artwork or in a form of writing or whatever form you present it in, immediately, as soon as you present it and put it in the world, there's already somebody telling you should look at this or you should look at that, or you'd really like the work of so-and-so, and then you go and you investigate those things, and then you rapidly realise that, you know, you're not doing anything new. People have been doing these things for thousands of years, and there's a lot of people been thinking about a lot of things, and then you're forced to, as someone who's professionally engaged in the world of thinking and the world of ideas, you're forced to find a new role within that world, because it is completely charted, and so you have to reinvent yourself, I think, a bit. But it's not something you can tell a young artist who's 20 years old now, because you have to experience that yourself. There's this eternal amnesia that goes from generation to generation, which is kind of necessary to give the motivation to go forth.
X-Ray Audio Diary è prodotta da Radio Papesse. www.radiopapesse.org